Good morning. Friday morning, October 19th, NC State week. Really big game tomorrow in Death Valley, 3:30. Feels like the biggest game of the year, and that's not the typical coach speak or player speak. They say that every week, but even from the outside, this feels like possibly the biggest challenge of the season for this Clemson team. Not that there are a whole lot of challenges on this schedule, which not nearly as strong as in recent years. Still don't know if this NC State team is really good. They surely look really good from what we've watched. Really would have been nice to see them against West Virginia, see that game be played, to see what this Wolfpack team is made of, particularly on the back end of that defense, which I think has some issues. Maybe that's part of the reason this spread is so large, surprisingly large, opened at 17 points. Maybe it's because NC State doesn't really have a dependable, I guess, running game, which they base a lot of their passing stuff off of. But heck, State didn't run the ball a lot last year against Clemson and still gave them fits, went up and down the field. So, really fascinating matchup between an improving Clemson secondary, one that had some issues at Texas A&M, maybe a little bit against Syracuse as well, against a really high-level passing attack, Ryan Finley. A bunch of big, physical, fast receivers who can go up and get it. So, really interesting matchup. On TigerIllustrated.com, we break it down by looking at a lot of the video of the Wolfpack so far in our weekly video review segment. Title sponsor of the Clemson Dubcast, Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm in Greenville. Very happy to have them aboard. Couldn't do it without them. Blake Smith and Brooke Archenhold, both Clemson grads, both huge fans. Forte of their firm is medical negligence. They represent patients and their family members in medical negligence actions. They also handle all sorts of other complex personal injury litigation. I can vouch for them. About 10 years ago, a family member had a pretty serious medical situation with one of the local hospitals, went to Blake Smith, and he very quickly and authoritatively gave us some great advice, and we were very thankful for that. Parham Smith and Archenhold offers free consultations. Give them a call, 864-990-4581, or parhamlaw.com. Also sponsoring the podcast is the Abernathy Boutique Hotel, right down about a block or two from the stadium. Great location. All the ESPN folks who are in Clemson at various points throughout the year, they stay there and they absolutely love it just because it's so convenient, so nice with all sorts of amenities, including the Taps Bar and Cafe. They also have a tailgate outside before home games and grilling out hot dogs, hamburgers, got a DJ, got multiple bars outside. They're partnering with Jack Daniels for those events. So a lot of cool stuff over at the Abernathy. Got a lot of good beers on tap inside at Taps Bar and Cafe. My favorite is the Hugie Street IPA. So go on over there and give them a look. Check them out right across from Lower Lot 2 or on the internets at theabernathy.com. All right, let's get to it. Local radio celebrity, good friend, longtime friend, Mickey Plowler. Enjoy. All right, Mickey Plowler, we're honored that you've already spent 3 hours behind a microphone today, and now you're about to spend the better part of a fourth, so thank you.
Well, I just want to come over and see Studio L-Dub. This place is awesome, man. What a great work environment.
Thank you. Yeah, I can't complain. I've told people that I could never go back to working in an office 9 to 5 once you've spent more than a decade.
The judge would sentence you to a cubicle, right? No, this is great, man. Beautiful place.
Hey, congratulations, Drake Plowler.
Yeah.
22 weeks.
How about that?
Exciting.
Yeah, we're excited. We tried for like a year. That was always a misconception of me. You know, like in high school, you think, oh my goodness, if you look at a girl, you know, she gets pregnant. But now, now it's like, it takes a little time. So I followed your blueprint, married a really smart woman who's going to be a great mom, who's into education, all that kind of stuff. So you kind of blazed that road for us, that path for me. And now we're excited about it. February, mid-February, hopefully. And he looks healthy and happy and everything's good so far. I appreciate you saying that.
So Meredith is probably not going to listen to this, so you can tell us, just between us. Have you started thinking about how you're going to work in your golf game to fatherhood?
I just put together a stroller the other day, and I'm trying to find an attachment to where I could put my golf clubs on it somewhere and push him around for 9 holes. I mean, that's better than like strolling through the neighborhood, right? You get to see the birds and the trees and the nice grass and the creeks, and where I hit it, you get it in the woods a few times, and that'd be pretty cool, right?
That would be. Yeah. So I want to learn more about you. We were just talking before I hit record, had a podcast with David Hale of ESPN a few weeks ago. And the interesting thing from that is that I've known David for years, but everything is just sort of small talk when we see each other. Like, hey, what do you think of Christian Wilkins? Or where are you going next week? And I didn't really learn about the dude until I actually sat down with him for the better part of an hour. So it's kind of similar with you. I think I know more about you than I do or did David. How long have you been in radio?
We are coming up November the 2nd this year will be the 20th anniversary of my first show at WCCP.
Wow.
And we're looking forward to it. It's great. Now, I left WCCP for like 18 months, but I can remember my first show, Larry, and you know how like your first gig, like you had either your first with drumming or when it comes to, you know, with writing or something like that, you think you're all prepared for it. I prepared. It was the Monday after NC State blew Clemson out in 1998. Torrey Holt maybe had like 948 yards and 17 touchdowns in that game. And that was my first show. And man, I went back and watched the game like 3 times, and I prepared 8 pages of notes on everything I saw. This is going to be a great show. And Tommy Powell, the late Tommy Powell, was producing the show. So I get in there, the very first show is called Plyler on Sports. It was a mid-morning show. And I do all of my, everything I've got that I prepared for. And I'm thinking, this is going to last the whole show. And at the end of it, we were like 12 minutes in, and I was thinking, we need to take a break or something, Tommy. And he's giving me the sign language of stretch it out. It's got to last longer. I thought I had 3 hours, and I had like 12 minutes of a whole bit. That was it. And it was a shock, because you don't know, going into it. But that was November the 2nd, 1998.
Okay, so before that, had you done any radio?
Yes, I did as a guest. I got into, after a brief career in the golf profession, the thing I knew I wanted to do. How far do you want to go back? Because let me say this.
As far back as you want.
My dad didn't like his job. And I knew pretty early on that I wanted to do something that was fun and I liked. I knew he kind of showed me what not to do. He was miserable going to work. And I said, man, I didn't want that. He was in a cubicle and I didn't want that. So I said, I'm gonna do something really fun. And so in college, I worked with Bob Bradley and Tim Beret in the sports information office over at Clemson. And I got to know some of those GAs. Gene Chizik was a football GA at the time. And Coach Bennett was a GA. And they had some great guys. I got to know Tommy West really well because I love the recruiting part of it. Barney Fair, who got in some trouble down there at Ole Miss, some of those guys. But I got to know the recruiting part of it, so I wanted to start my own recruiting magazine. And at that time, when I had all these plans of doing this, Clemson was on top of the world, and they were rolling, late 80s and early 90s. Everything was great. Well, Coach Ford, is fired. And in South Carolina, they made a coaching change, and I was like, man, it wasn't a very good time. I got into golf business for a little bit, but always knowing I kind of want to get back into it. So for 3 years, I published my own football recruiting newsletter. This started in 1993. The day that they hired Tommy West, I knew Tommy, was about the same time that South Carolina hired Brad Scott. And I didn't know him well, but I knew him and met him at a coaching clinic before that. So I called both those guys and I said, look, man, I'd like to do this. And if you guys will promise to help me out a little bit, let's do it. And so both of them were very, very helpful. And I decided to do that. That was in 93. I did a newsletter for 3 years until 96. And I was traveling all. Like my first 2 years, I traveled 50,000 miles to go see players. I remember one time, Larry, I went to see Jasper Sanks, who signed with Georgia. I drove to Columbus, Georgia. I actually had to go to Alabama and turn around because I missed the exit at Carver High School. And he played about 2 plays and he hurt his knee. And I was like, man, this is crazy. But it was great times. We were scouting out players and seeing players. I saw some of the best players, the best teams I've ever seen. And it was great to see all that. And then in 96, I teamed with Bill King, who's now with Rivals Radio or on XM now. He was at WLAC Radio in Nashville. And we published a magazine for 3 years called the Southeastern Recruiting Alliance. As part of that, one of the things we would do was we'd go on newsstand. I mean, go on radio stations. We had newsstands in like 40 different cities across the South. And so we go on WJOX in Birmingham. We're going on a Baton Rouge station or a Jacksonville station as a guest and promote it, go to our newsstands. And I was actually writing a syndicated newspaper column that about six newspapers took actually on that and, saying go to the newsstand or subscribe to they're doing this. And one of our stations was Clemson. And Tommy Powell and George Clement, who owned the station at that time, after doing it a couple of years, said, man, we want you to have your own show. We negotiated for about a year and ended up taking it and started November 2nd, 1998.
Continuing to do the newsletter while you were?
Yes. Now, at that point in time, I was a one-man crew. Bill was there, and Bill's a great guy, but I wrote it, proofed it, laid it out, produced it, printed it, or took it to a printer, actually, but then put the labels on. We had a subscription base and licked all the stamps. I didn't have a meter. We licked all the stamps and did all the accounting and all that kind of stuff. And at that point in time, it got expensive. It was like $1 to print and $1.01 to mail. I remember I had like $1 stamp and a penny stamp every single time. And it got to be expensive. And time where the internet came along about that time. And so got out of that and got into MickeyPollard.com, which was a recruiting website at the time. And we did it. It was really cool. We did it for did a website for about 3 years as well.
Yeah.
Just promoting that. And I was living in Columbia going back and forth, which it was a lot of fun, no doubt about it.
All right. So when you were first starting out before Bill King, you got your own newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
How are you distributing it? How is it being laid out? Like, tell me the technical.
I remember, I worked in the sports information office at Clemson, and I remember the first time we had Macintosh computers, Apple computers, and we had this great, publishing program that we learned. And so I borrowed $2,500 from a friend. I sold him 25% of my stock for $2,500. And he bought it. So I bought me a brand new one of those Performa Macintoshes, if you remember those days.
Yeah.
I learned how to lay it out in school, but I laid it out myself. I was actually going and scouting the players. And, my work day now is easy. But back then, man, it was 18-hour work days. I wrote a single page on two pages on every single ACC and SEC school. And, man, like covering Duke or covering Virginia football was kind of tough. But we did all those. And we also had inserts that we put for every single team. If you subscribe, you check your favorite team. And I had like a four-page insert that I would put in there as well. And laid it all out. The parents were great because they would send me pictures that we would put in there. We changed that magazine format in 96, though. But it was a learning experience. Had a local printer that printed it up for us. We had a subscription base of, I don't know how many thousands it was now. The newspaper column certainly helped, but we were doing radio shows that was a lot of fun. I was a shy, introverted guy, and Chris Allen over in Greenville had a great show over there, and we were promoting because we had a couple of great newsstands over in newsstands were big, in Greenville off of Pleasantburg Road, and I remember being a little bit nervous before I did my very first radio show. But then you got on and you started talking about Roscoe Crosby's of the world, whoever it was at the time, major Apple Whites of the world, or it might be. And it just kind of flowed and had a great time. Didn't think we would do radio. But because of the internet and because of the printing cost and because of the timeliness of it, radio seemed to work a lot. And that's where people kind of got. We had 900 numbers. Remember those?
Oh, man, yeah.
that was great because people were paying $1.99 a minute to hear about Clemson recruiting and all that kind of stuff. So that was kind of cool. But technology basically led me into radio. And the other thing is, you and I talked about this before, it was great because on a sports talk show, I could talk about baseball and basketball and talk about golf or tennis or boxing or whatever it might be. You weren't pigeonholed into one thing, and it kind of re-energized my, at a pretty early age.
So your first few years, you keep saying we. Did you have somebody helping you?
No.
Or it was just you?
No, it was me. Bill was great as a, kind of a figurehead kind of guy, and his name meant a lot to us. But it was a one-man show. I would leave out most Thursday afternoons and go to a Thursday night game somewhere and drive home. I had a Chevy Corsica, and I put a bunch of miles on that. And then I would go to – now, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't go anywhere south of, say, Jacksonville. Spent a lot of time in Atlanta, a lot of time in Charlotte, seeing the C.J. Leaks and those guys, seeing Douglas High School and Southwest DeKalb High School and seeing Jamal Lewis and Cozy Coleman and Deion Grant and some of those guys. But just going and scouting those guys, that was Thursdays and Fridays. That's what it was like. I'd go to high schools on Fridays. And Paul does a lot of that now, you know, going out and scouting those guys. I would go to the Clemson game on Saturday for the most part. You know, all the home games, most of the road games. And then get back in Sunday and start writing what we saw and calling prospects and typing in it, printing it, and editing it. And my mom was an editor, too, by the way. So I say we. Yeah, my mom edited a lot of that.
So this is back in Columbia.
Yes.
You would have your computer back at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds exhausting. You're coming back for
remember
Clemson
this.
Games.
How old are you now?
43.
Okay. Remember the energy level we had at 23 and 24 and 25?
Sort of, kind of.
I get a hard time from my friends now saying, you work 3 hours a day. Well, honest to goodness, this is a true story, Larry. Two things. For 3 years, I didn't take a day off. I worked Christmas Day. And I remember being stuck. When the magazine would come out, I would bunker in for about 4 or 5 days and crank it out. 32 pages. And
monthly?
Just crank this thing out. Monthly, yes. Yeah, we were the first monthly recruiting newsletter. And first month recruiting magazine, I'm sorry, magazine, in 96. Anyway, I can remember going to a Wendy's in Irmo, and I drove up to the drive-thru, and I told the girl who was there, I said, you know, you're the first person I've talked to in person in 5 days. Like, you're the first person I've had interaction with in 5 days. Because you'd bunker in. You know that. You have deadlines. You've done that in the newspaper business. You have deadlines. You just bunker in. But that was 1 month. There was 1 week a month that wasn't very good. The rest of the time, meeting parents, talking to coaches, scouting, watching that film stuff, that was a lot of fun. But, yeah, I was single. I had no – it was – I enjoyed it. I really loved it and learned a lot. And through that, built unbelievable relationships with coaches. You know, because after you lean on them for information. There's a time in there where they kind of lean on you a little bit too. And that was a lot of fun of getting to know some of those young staffs. You know, one of the things that probably looking back on my fondest times was helping, this sounds corny, but like the staff at North Carolina A&T, I was kind of close to those guys at the time. And they would say, hey man, send us players. You know, like when you see someone on Friday night, call us. We didn't have cell phones back then, but like call us and let us know. And so, like, helping kids get scholarships, or not get scholarships, but, like, point them out, that was a lot of fun. They were limited in their resources. So it was a lot of fun helping those kind of guys.
So when the magazines or newsletters get to your house, is it just, like, thousands of – just boxes and boxes of
– Yeah, yeah.
Is that how it works? They
yeah,
would
really
arrive
did.
On your doorstep?
No. I had to go pick them up from a printer in downtown Columbia. And we would UPS to newsstands. And so I had to work. We UPS them straight from there.
Next day?
Yeah. That was great. And then I would go, and I had all of my magazines, I mean, all my envelopes, and I'd stuff them. And that wasn't fun. I can still, you know how you have, like, the memories? I can still, like, taste the stamps. That wasn't good,
wow.
Man. But, you know, again, I was a young man. I had nothing else. I was hopefully differentiating myself a little bit. By just working. Nobody was doing it like that back then. You got a lot of guys that are working really hard now trying to make. You know that in the newspaper business and in the internet business. You were a young buck and you did what it took. But it was fun work. You know, I get to watch football all day and get to talk to football coaches all day. It was really cool.
So back then, the only other people in this state doing it was Phil Kornbluh, mm-hmm. Right? Was that it?
Yeah. In this state, yes. Phil did a great, and he's always done a great job. He offered me part of his business because he had a newsletter at the time, and I turned it down. I can tell you, Rivals at the time, Shannon Terry owned it in Nashville, and that was Bobby Burton in some of those days, and they offered me a little bit. Looking back on it, I probably made a financial mistake back then, pretty early in those days. Bill King was really good friends with Bobby Burton and with Shannon Terry at the time, and I chose not to do that. You know, I hadn't been the best businessman in the world through the years. That's obvious when you look at my bank account. But it didn't feel right at that time. But those guys were doing a great job. Earlier on, it was Max Infinger and Joe Terranova and Tom Lemming. And then Bobby got going, and then Shannon got going. And about in the late 90s, that's where Rivals and Scout and all those teams kind of formed up.
You said you can still taste the stamps and all that.
Ugh.
Can you reproduce one of your 1-900 recordings that you left?
I can, and here, well, if we had time, I could do a lot of it. But the main thing is you wanted to talk a long time, because you wanted it was $1.99 a minute. Now the phone company got a dollar of that or whatever, and Bill got 50 cents. I got 49 cents, whatever it was. And I only did Clemson, South Carolina, maybe one or two other schools. So it was Bill's 900 number, And he would send you a report of how much he made, and that paid bills. And I can do that here in a minute. But let me say this. It was not per hour. It wasn't very good pay. And I can remember first starting out of Larry Wolf, who was a Clemson guy that I knew, a great guy out of Lancaster, that bought 25% of my company. I ended up paying him back and buying my stock. That was in our contract. That was great that he allowed me to do that. And he didn't make any money on the deal. It was him being very nice. The other thing I remember was, I know you're a man of faith too, was I would pray. I'd go by the post office every day and the bank every day. And sometimes I go to the post office. I wouldn't go to the bank because subscriptions, you didn't have a subscription that day. Sometimes you get 10 or 12. And I had advertisers as well in the newsletter and the magazine. But I can remember Larry having a bill. I remember my printer calling me. And I'm saying, hey, can I come by Thursday to drop this off? And they say, well, unless you pay us for the last time, we can't print your next one. And I can remember saying a prayer of God, please somehow, some way, let me get some sort of money in here to do it. And I'd go to the post office that day or the next day, and there'd be a check that somebody owed me, some newsstand would pay me, that would be just enough to cover it. And it was like, okay, we made it that month. That's really cool. But I was single, man. Nowadays you couldn't do it. And that was different time, different place, but just, I don't know why, but every single time it just found a way to work out.
Okay. 1-900 Plowler.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We would say, thanks for calling the Clemson football recruiting hotline. A lot going on in Clemson right now. Roscoe Crosby is going to take his 5 official visits. He has set up LSU on October the 12th. He's got Florida State on October the 19th. On October the 27th, he'll be going to Georgia. He's got South Carolina on the 24th. And Clemson coming up the last week. Rick Stockstill feels pretty good about this one. As you know, Roscoe Crosby is having a great year, one of the top wide receivers in the state. We feel pretty good about Clemson and Roscoe Crosby right now, but we'll know a lot more after that Florida State visit. Right at this point in time, we don't think he's going to announce until signing day. Stay tuned. We'll always keep up more with him. He's having a great year. This past Friday night, he caught 11 balls for 182 yards and 2 touchdowns as Union State undefeated under Mike Anthony, and it was a great week for Roscoe Crosby. Again, Clemson feels pretty good there. Tigers want to improve their quarterback recruiting. Billy Lucky, quarterback out of Alabama. We've talked about in the past on this hotline. It's going to be Clemson and Alabama. He'll be visiting Alabama on January the 12th. He'll visit Clemson on January the 19th. Right now, feel like it's 50-50. We know a lot more after his official visits. They did visit this past weekend. We know Clemson was in Jacksonville visiting whatever linebacker. So we go on like that. And it'll be 2 or 3 minutes of official visit dates, unofficial visits. Back then, now remember, it was a great deal of January official visits were the determining factor, mm-hmm. which is seems crazy now, right? Yeah. One of the things, just memories of it, when I went to CCP, we had a recruiting show on Sunday nights. It was a 3-hour show. And Larry, we would start coming in at noon on Sunday, and we would tape interviews with kids. And I remember one time we had 60 different interviews on a radio show. Now, we cut them short because we knew we'd get in touch with them. It was a big recruiting weekend for Clemson or South Carolina or Georgia, and we would call up. Clemson would have like 30 kids, and we would have like 28 of the 30 on that recruiting show. But it was a Sunday night recruiting show, and we had a staff. I say we on this one because it really was. It was 10 or 12 guys, and they would call the prospect and put him on hold. And 4 or 5, everybody had sheets. We had 100 guys we're trying to call and get in touch with. When they get back from their official visits, you kind of had it laid out. Okay, we think these guys will be back early. These guys are traveling farther off. But we'd get those guys on the phone, and we'd tape short little interviews. How was your trip? Who's your host? What did you like about it? Where you stand now? And we would have, anywhere from 30 to 60. But one night we had over 60 players in a 3-hour show of taping them and just acting like they were live, but just bam, 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 bam. Commitments and updating it. But that was a lot of fun. That's when you could break news. And it was all in January. We didn't start till January. We did 4 shows and interviewing, like I said, just tons of guys and breaking news every Sunday night.
I'm going to have Cornblue on here at some point to talk about a lot of this stuff, a lot of that history. So were y'all like competitors? Were you trying to sort of find ways to do stuff he wasn't or in ways that he wasn't?
He had the nightly radio aspect of it. So I didn't compete against him there. But as far as breaking news, yeah. And that's what made you better. I remember talking to Whitey Jordan about this, that one of the reasons why SMU got in trouble, I know you had Whitey as well, who's awesome.
Yeah.
SMU got in trouble was that you had two newspapers that were competing. And they're trying to break stories. So, yeah, I think it was competitive. You know, he might not admit that. He was much more established than I was. But at that point in time, yeah, you wanted to break it. And I always felt like that he was in Columbia. He was a South Carolina guy, and I was Clemson. I was a Clemson guy. I can tell you that there was a time in there I was doing a radio show. And I can tell the story now because he's not working anywhere. But I was doing a radio show in Columbia with Matt Hogue, who's now the athletic director at Coastal Carolina.
Yep.
And I had just gotten back. I spent time with Jerry Caldwell in Chester, South Carolina, a defensive back that eventually signed with Georgia Tech. And Jerry was a great kid, really bright kid. And he leaned to South Carolina throughout. But then he went to Georgia Tech, and he was going to sign with Georgia Tech. And he flat out told me, I'm leaning to Georgia Tech. And so I came on and reported on the air. And the South Carolina staff called me up after hearing that. And they just blistered me. You're a Clemson guy. Why would you say that? You have Clemson underwear on. You have orange underwear on is what the guy said. And the defensive line coach at the time who played at Lenore Ryan, I went, do you wear Lenore Ryan underwear? Because I said, I went to Clemson, but I got a business to run, bud. And I said, verbatim, I'm not going to lie for you. You know, that kind of ticked him off.
You're not naming names?
Brad Lawing. Okay. But you know, it's like he got all over me, or Gardner Webb, or wherever he was. Like he got all over me. I said, well, I'm not going to lie about it. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're not doing that. That's what the kid told me. So we're going to go with all that. But I always felt like that. Another thing that happened, funny with South Carolina, since this is your Clemson site, I was supposed to speak. A good friend of mine was the head golf professional at their university club there that opened up in Columbia. It's a golf course. And they had they want to do like a signing day or day after signing day kind of thing there. And he called me up and said, man, can you come speak to this group? We're thinking about, you know, playing a little early golf in February and having a big outing. And I want you to come speak. We'll have dinner. I went, yeah, man, I'd love to. And about a week before we're supposed to go over there, he called me. And he goes, we got to cancel. I said, what's wrong? Because Mike McGee, the athletic director of South Carolina, canceled you out. You can't come to our golf club. No. That stuff happened all the time, though. Stuff like that. That's when Clemson and South Carolina recruited against each other. And I was the Clemson guy, and Phil was the South Carolina guy. So I would speak to the Clemson clubs, and he'd speak to the South Carolina clubs. And that was probably more than anything else, that if Clemson got a guy, he was better, and that Mickey's really good, and South Carolina got a guy, Phil's better, and he's really good, you know, that kind of stuff.
So, all right, you said that when you first got into it, that you called Brad Scott to see if he could help you.
Yes.
Okay, so his first year is 94 at South Carolina through 98.
Right.
Did you ever have any tension with him at all?
None whatsoever. Brad was smart. Brad knew how to play the game, but Brad was, I thought, wholesome. I was good to him. He was good to me. I didn't have a lot of interaction. Once he became the head coach, because that was early. That was like at the South Carolina Coaches Convention in the summertime of knowing it. And Brad would good old boy you. You know, there's my old buddy there. Come here, you know. And he didn't know me because he was from Florida. But I told him what I was doing, and he was very, very nice to me. And as a matter of fact, back then, you know, to get phone numbers, you know, they had to help you out. And Clyde Wren was there, and Brad told him, man, you get the guy phone numbers, this guy's going to help, and we're going to help him, we'll help us. And it was a good working relationship. But it wasn't I talked to Brad maybe the entire time he was there, maybe three times ever, but never had the first run-in on any situation with Brad.
It was his underlings who were doing it.
Defensive line coach and then athletic director and so on.
or his superior, athletic director.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Mike McGee canceled me out that time.
I can't sort of stop thinking about, okay, you're talking about the 80s and the 90s. Newspapers are the dominant force in terms of reporting and the things that most fans are reading for their information. And then you guys are hustling behind the scenes. Well, not really behind the scenes, but just doing something, giving fans what they want. Mm-hmm. And I've long believed that had newspapers been listening to what their fans wanted, as in more than one story a day, as in actually covering recruiting because fans care about recruiting, that there'd be no rivals. Wouldn't have even started. There wouldn't have been a 1-900 number. What do you think about all that?
Now, from my personal standpoint, I was great. Like I said, it was between, I don't know the exact numbers because I'm getting old now, but 6 to 7, 8 and 9. It wasn't 10. It was somewhere between 6 and 9 newspapers were taking a weekly syndicated column. I didn't do it all year long. We did it for maybe 40 weeks or something like that. It was the Gainesville Sun, I know, was one because we got a ton of Florida subscriptions out of it. I know there was AL.com. You know, the Alabama newspapers that conglomerated together, you know, so like the Mobile Register and some of those actually took it. And there were, you know, a couple of Winston-Salem maybe. Anyway, there were some papers that took it. So they were good to me because at the end of my, I charged them very little to do it. It took care of them because they didn't want to cover recruiting.
Exactly.
And at the bottom of it, I got to put my address and phone number for subscriptions out of it. So that worked out for us. But I think you're right. And it's technology of you've got to meet your demands. You've got to meet what your fans want. The other thing that's happening, and this is not even going back that far. You know, you think about, newspaper, radio, internet coming, changing all of that. But they can have a bigger, newspapers can still do great in the internet. I'm not sure they do. And, you talk about listening. On our show now, something has happened, to your point, is we get at least 500 texts every day on my show, on our text line.
Wow.
And on it, inevitably, Larry, because now we have Netflix and now we DVR games or DVR shows. We watch what we want to watch, when we want to watch it. And we go to the websites that we want to go to. Everything's a la carte for everything you do. Inevitably, at least once a day, sometimes twice a day, sometimes three or four times, I'll get a text that says, stop talking about that. Don't talk about that anymore. And in my head, and I fight back with them. I'm thin-skinned. I fight back with them. And in my head, I'm thinking, would anybody like text in Rush Limbaugh and say, Rush, don't talk about the economy anymore. Talk about the Russian thing now. Whatever. Like, who are you? This is our show. This is what we prepare to talk about. And at the same time, I've got 60 texts that say, hey, man, what about this aspect of it? For instance, you talk about the Major League Baseball playoffs. And it's not big. But if I just get the scores, and the other day we talked for about 4 minutes about Major League Baseball. It was the Yankees and Red Sox. It was the biggest thing that happened that night. And I've got maybe 20 to 30 texts on the Red Sox and the Yankees from the game for the 4 or 5 minutes we're talking about it. And two people will come in and say, don't talk about that anymore. Change the subject. I'm like, wait a minute, man. Like, 40 people like it, two don't. What are you going to do? But that's how we are. Like, we want what we want, when we want it, and how we want it now. A la carte in everything in life, right? We are religious. Like, you listen to your podcast or go get your own service of who you want to hear, what they're trying to tell you at church now. You know, it's crazy, mm-hmm. huh?
And they want it seems like, and they get mad when they don't
yes.
get what they want. People are eager to be mad now, more nowadays than they, have you noticed that?
Like, yeah.
In the 2 decades you've been in radio, I mean,
yeah.
15 years ago, was it more cordial or, I guess, genteel in the interactions, people calling in on the radio, or no?
A lot of that, I think, comes from the anonymity, is that the right word? Anonymous mm-hmm. part mm-hmm. of that is that Rock Hill Tiger is different than Sam Malone, you know, who lives at 219 Oak Street in Rock Hill, who works at the Bosch plant there, whose son plays baseball. So that guy's got a lot less chance of coming to you going, you idiot, I can't believe you said that. But Rock Hill Tiger or Gaffney Gamecock can say, you're a moron, you stink, I hate you, I don't listen to your show anymore. I'm like, well, how are you texting me? You know. So we get, and I told my wife this, she's a principal, assistant principal now, and at Clemson, you got like 900 students. At 6 Mile, you got like 500 students. I said, so you should have, at Clemson Elementary, you probably got about 50 parents that are active and vocal and negative sometimes. And up there, you should have about 45. I mean, about 25 of those or 30 of those. It's just I think there's about 5% of the people who wanted to be bad people and just be jerks and the glass half empty and that kind of stuff. But the social media aspect of it, we think people care about our opinions. Me and you included, right? And then in a much bigger picture, the idea that we raise our kids now to think that they're so important. We feel guilty that we don't spend enough time with them, so you're valuable maybe, that mom and dad are both working, so whatever you want, we're going to cater to. And if we don't cater to it, then you raise your little cane and you'll get what you want maybe. I don't know. Somebody, you have a sociologist on the LW cast here. Talk about that maybe. But yeah, I think that, If a guy could call on his show and said, my name is Tom Smith and I live on Pendleton Road in Clemson and I don't like you, I think you're an idiot and you're wrong about that, I don't think they would do that. But you can be Gaffney Gamecock or Tommy Tiger and now you can do that and get away with it.
Business owners out there, if you own a business that accepts credit cards, you need to listen up. Tandem Payment, based right here in the upstate, run by Clemson folks, is changing the face of payment processing, quickly becoming the most cost-effective solution for all small businesses. Tandem's program saves you up to 90% on processing charges and gives your customers what they love most, choices. This is not some crazy introductory offer. Tandem's technology allows business owners to offset their credit card processing costs by applying a small customer service charge to each sale they make. If you want to know more, visit TandemPayment.com today. Former Tiger Hot Rod McDowell works over there at Tandem Payment. They handle all their business and customer service face-to-face. So give them a call, 864-672-1570, if you're tired of spending an arm and a leg on all those credit card processing fees.
I remember reading years ago, I think it was in the research for the book on Danny Ford on his tenure, after a game, you know, he got criticized for his offense
all the
back
time.
Then, all the time. And some, I think it was, he would, after the game, after he got done with his press conference, or maybe before, would he walk up to the press box and talk with Jim Phillips and do an interview or something like that? But there was this image I have in my head. It might be wrong. It's probably wrong. But the point is still legit or accurate that a fan, as he's conducting his post-game show with Jim Phillips, there's a fan yelling at him, you need to pass the ball more or something like that. That's the guy who now would be on the message board or on Twitter or texting you.
So you sit in the press box. And so you miss a huge entertainment value. Inevitably, if I'm in Winston-Salem, Tallahassee, Chestnut Hill, Clemson, Columbia, Athens, I get the guy, and it's a different guy behind me, who says, throw the ball! Turn the page in the playbook! Give it to, put ETN in! I had a little deal, and there were great Clemson fans behind me. I knew one of the guys who was getting all over Tony Elliott at the Wake Forest game, and I had to point out to him that, you know, this Clemson team currently is averaging more points and more yards per play than any Clemson offense in school history. What play do you want them to run, brother? You know? But yet, you know, somebody told me one time, preaching, barbecuing, and football, despite having no professional training at all, men, we think we can do it better, right?
I paid my $90 for a ticket.
$90, huh?
Well, the other thing you might tell your vocal seatmate is the coaches can't hear you.
No.
So, and we've talked about this before. I firmly believe those people, even though I'm not around them a lot, they're performing for the other fans. They want the other fans to know that they know football. And there's probably a correlation with those fans who are yelling. They're probably wearing headphones too. They're listening to the broadcast, and they look real official.
Yeah.
You know, saying even my wife knew that play was coming. That's a classic.
Well, and in that case too, that case of that saying of keep your mouth closed and rather than open your mouth and proving everybody right. You know that one because that's what they're doing. But they pay their money. They can do that. Yeah, but you know, coaches always say this. I don't listen to radio. And then they'll say, but I heard you say this on the show the other day. Reggie Herron used to do this to me, okay? This is a good one for your old listeners. Reggie Herron, who was, I basically called him Sonny Corleone. Shoot first, ask questions second, right? Hothead guy, right? Great football coach. Great linebacker coach. Great coordinator. Passionate guy. One of my favorite people I've ever been around. I would get a phone call. I'd have a show from 3 to 6 or whatever. And I'd get a phone call at 6:30. And he would call me up and go, you no good SOB. I can't believe you said this. What you said was that we were in cover one way too often and we blitzed way too often. I want to tell you this. I broke it down and we only blitzed 11 times. And I said, Reggie, did you hear me say that? He goes, no. I said, well, a caller called in and blitzed and said that. And I said, no, really, I don't think they blitzed that much this week. He goes, oh, I'm sorry, man. My wife said you said that. I'm sorry. So I got it all the time, man. Koning was one that didn't like me. You know, he was always talking about me to other staff members like, I can't believe you said this. And then, you know, you confront him about it. And he's like, so it's easy to be, at least Reggie said something to you about it, you know, but he was wrong about accusing you of it. But they all say they don't listen. They all listen. And you know this from your writings. They all go to Tiger Illustrated. They all read it. In the end, everybody wants to be liked. You know, you can say it. But one thing about getting back to the original point, I think it's okay to nitpick as long as you preface it first. Like that gentleman that wants ETN to carry the ball more. I get it. But as long as you say to your buddies, hey, man, I know we're great on offense. I know we're undefeated. I know we're third in the country. I know that we're 46-4 under this regime. But I would like to see ETN more rather than run ETN, you idiot. I'm like, wait a minute, man. You know? Nitpicking. If your major point is nitpicking, this is a true story, Larry. After the Wake Forest game, I'm coming home with my good friend. He went up there with me, and he said, watch, mark my words. We just won 63-3. Mark my words. You'll see negative comments on Monday. I went, there's no way they could. 5 of our first 10 text messages were negative on Monday. True story. 5 of the first 10 were negative. I said that they played 56 players, and they played 4 guards in the first period. One guy said, well only 3 of them blocked. They scored 63. It's okay. You know, it's okay.
One of the advantages that we have at Tiger Illustrated over you and the radio and your text is when somebody's saying something, when they're, you know, when a subscriber is going crazy over something or saying this coach is terrible and should be fired, there's a post history button where that you can go back and look at. Not that I don't ridicule my subscribers, but I can just privately can click on that and go back. What I like doing is going back to 2016 and seeing what they were saying late in that season about, you know, Deshaun's terrible and he's not going to do anything in the NFL.
Don't you think, now let me say this for your listeners. I pay for my subscription to TigerIllustrated.com.
Thank you.
I don't share my password with anybody.
Thank you.
Okay. So I don't know why anybody would do that. Don't steal from the guys. But I go to it every day, and we have Paul on the show every day, and I mean every week, and I love it. I'm a big, big, big fan. And I don't want to come across as saying that this is who Clemson people are, this is who people are nowadays, because I personally believe that 90% of your readers and 90% of my listeners are just good people.
Right.
Now, much like the alt-right and Antifa or Antifa, whatever those people are, you're going to get the 5% on each side that just make the news and just make you look like that's what the fan base looks. That's not the case. Most people are very satisfied with your product, my product. But it's those squeaky wheels that we tend to, you know, we're thin-skinned, man. We want people to like us, and we fight. But you fight back with them. I love when you fight back with them. I think you need to do more on Twitter. I think you need to do more of it. I think you need to do more of the Louisville radio show. Remember the Louisville guy?
Oh, yeah. I'm planning on asking them if they want to come back for a podcast. Not to ridicule. That's the thing. What I do, I think people sometimes get the wrong idea. They're like, man, you came off the top rope on that guy. And I'm like, I was just, to me, it's just debating, you know. There's nothing personal ever taken or intended, you know.
It's okay. I will say this. It's okay to criticize. And I said this about one of the former Clemson presidents I got on. It's okay to criticize the position, but not the person. And for some reason, we've crossed that line. Yeah, we want to argue. We're more polarizing. But it sells. Like, I always talk about NASCAR now on the show. Nobody cares about NASCAR. But when Earnhardt was there, he was so polarizing that people cared about it. And so maybe that leads us there a little bit. Speaking of that, can you tell the folks about the time that I called you an idiot?
Oh, man.
On the
yes,
radio?
I have that written down.
Oh, great.
We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
I don't want
to. I just wanted you to touch on that. That's great. Yeah.
I don't want to forget what was on my mind. 2 points. Number one, people who say, you know, when there's just a debate going on, if I respond to somebody by disagreeing, it's shots fired.
Yeah.
No, there weren't shots fired. I'm just disagreeing. It's okay. Yeah. Well, you know, we can all get along and disagree. Number two, in defense of a lot of these anonymous people who are texting into or calling into radio shows or posting on message boards or Twitter, like, do you have a text chain with a group of dudes?
Yes.
Everybody does, okay?
Yes.
Are you more prone to saying crazy, outlandish, even off-color stuff on a text chain than you are on a public forum?
Sure.
Absolutely.
To my buddies, yes.
Right, to your buddies. But what I'm saying is, listeners to a radio show or subscribers, they don't work for the radio station. They don't work for the website. It's not their name. And so, therefore, they're more prone to doing just sort of the dude humor, that you and I would only confine to something super private.
Great point. It's a great point. I need to do that. We had a seminar that lasted an entire day. Everybody at CCP went. This was back in July or August. And the guy was great about understanding who your audience is and like why. There's a point you tried to make, but and I said, man, I need to be less engaged, more engaged with everybody, and less engaged with the one or two that disagree with you. And man, Monday morning went right back in and fought with a guy again. But and again, in the old days, I felt like that you could have a debate because you and I are going to agree upon so many things that if there are 5% of things we disagree with, that doesn't have to define our relationship or define that moment. It's okay that if we disagree, because, you know, I talked about this on the show before, that you would think we would be great at changing people's minds because we try so hard in our country now, right? But yet we're terrible at it because no one changes their mind.
That's right.
We can, you can point out all kinds of facts, but the other side's not listening. And when they come back at you and trying to change your mind, your mind's already made up. And on our radio show, I've talked about this for years, that when somebody comes in with a guy texted me this morning, and he was convinced that we said we hope Tua gets hurt, which we've never said any athlete ever wants to get hurt. And he goes, well, I hope that flaky, pretty boy, feathered-haired quarterback you guys have might get hurt. And I almost wanted to debate back the guy, but I was like, okay, here's the deal. You've been a Gamecock fan for 30 years. Do you think in the next 30 seconds I can change your mind? I can't.
Yeah.
So why would I engage in that? Because I'm crazy and stupid because of bro humor, I guess, maybe.
We are more tribal.
Yeah.
I mean, we have all this technology now. I mean, it's incredible what we have at our fingertips, and yet we're more this camp or that camp, one or the other, than we've been in a long, long time. It's so funny, and I think we've talked about this too before, but this is a state of 4 million people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two major schools, and both schools, you know, the fan bases, like the more extreme version of the fan bases, call the other ones stupid, inbred redneck. That's not smart, like, because, I mean, we're all the same people for the most part.
Yeah.
Aren't we?
We are. At church the other day, they're passing out window stickers for church. You know, for bumper stickers for your church. And the pastor said, we wear these, we put this on a car to promote our church, obviously, but also to say that when that guy cuts you off in line, that he or she's not the idiot, but because we're all brothers in this. But think about that before, like in politics, these people are yelling and screaming back at each other. But on Saturday, we get together and whoever you're in stadium with, that's your brothers. That whatever else you're fighting about Monday through Sunday. Nowadays, a lot of times, right? Sunday through Friday, we put those aside because now my political opposition, my opposition to what I think about anything else going on in the world, that's my brother now. You know, we got the same color hat on now. You know, it's crazy, isn't it? Tribal is a great way to put it.
All right. I got a 14-year score to settle with you, Mickey.
I love this when you bring this up.
It was at 3:24 p.m. on February 3rd, 2020. No, I'm just kidding. I don't remember the exact.
You were in Charleston.
I was working for the Charleston Post and Courier. This was in 2004. No, this was after the 2000. Actually, I'm drawing a blank. When was it that they had the big staff reshuffling?
Mm.
They fired Lovett. Oh, after the 04 season was when that happened, right?
Can I mention something about the Lovett deal? That was one of the strangest days. Did they fire Lovett and O'Kane? Was that the same time?
Lovett, O'Kane, and people they moved Brad to offensive line and Ron West to defensive line. It was a big reshuffling.
On that morning, I'm doing the show, and I got a phone call off the air, and it's from someone inside the athletic department. And they said, John Lovett and Mike O'Kane have been fired. And it's right in the middle of the radio show. And my producer says, do we go with this? And I went, I know it's happened because the source is right. But I said, I can't go on the air with this now. And this is, you know, the world's changed a little bit. Maybe we would nowadays. But I said, you know, this is a small place, and I've got to go to Bilo or to Hardee's or whatever and see these people. I'm not going to announce. I'm going to let them tell their wives. They said, it just happened like 5 minutes ago. It was like, I don't want their kids or their wives to hear that their dad and their husband got fired that day. That was a weird, weird, weird day there. But anyway, so going back to it.
So I wrote an article, also having talked to people in the football office, and they were telling me, man, we have no clue what Tommy's doing. Like, we're in the dark. And
Tommy Bowden.
I'm sorry, yeah, Tommy Bowden.
Not Tommy West.
Because this is in the interim.
Right.
After he had made the changes and before he had brought in Vic Koning and Rob Spence.
Right.
And so, like, I guess a week passes maybe where there's just all this speculation and people are wondering what's going on, and not even the assistants, I guess, are being told what Tommy's doing. Full disclosure, that's not a story. Like, in your defense, like, just saying, oh, the coach, Tommy Bowden's not telling his coaches what he's going to do, who cares?
I think that's
like,
a story.
I don't know.
In hindsight, that's a story.
It was kind of a sensational approach to the story that I had, and one that I think, as you're a young reporter and you're like in your first year of covering a team, you're trying to make a name for yourself. You're trying to, you know, be noticed. Mm-hmm. And so I think that really played into that. I would never write that now because I'd be like, what? Who cares? You know, anyway.
But that's a story, though, at that time, I thought.
I guess so.
But in hindsight,
I'll have to go back and read it. But I remember going back and reading it maybe like 8 or 10 years ago and being like, ooh, I don't know. I know I got a call from Tim Bure after I wrote it, and he was not happy.
Right.
So at least one other person had or has objections to it. But I'm listening to, listening to your radio show that day that it came out, and I never expected to hear my name. And how did it go? It goes, yeah, there's people writing stuff.
Doing the accent, too, with the tone of voice and everything.
Yeah, there's people writing all kind of stupid stuff, including that idiot Larry Williams. And I'm like, whoa! Oh, fantastic.
We didn't know each other at all.
No, I had never met you. The first time I actually saw you maybe was a year or two later.
This is a great story.
You show up to practices like maybe once a year, you know, as in a media capacity, which I admire that you're not like, I mean, you're a fan. You don't deny
it.
And you're not trying to be something that you aren't. You're not pretending anything.
Right.
So there was never any like, any sort of impression that you were trying to create that you're some media guy. But I guess when did Bush get elected?
2004.
Okay, so it was right around then. You knew that a few of the sports writers were sort of a liberal persuasion,
right.
And shows up with a Bush Country t-shirt with the blue and the red, you know, broken down by state, how many states Bush won. That was fantastic.
My ex-wife was a liberal. She hid that shirt. I found it after we got divorced. It was in a closet that we never used, and she had hid it. I couldn't even find it. It was the only day I got a chance to wear it, and I wore it in the face of some of those guys.
And you were prancing, like you had your chest stuck out, like literally.
Yeah. That was 2004, so how old was I then? That was how many years ago?
14, right?
14 years. Yeah. I was 36 years old and brash and all that. How long were you mad at me?
I really wasn't. I don't think I was mad at you. I was more just kind of bewildered.
I was taking phone calls that time from a couple of staff members like, who's this idiot Larry Williams thinks he is? And so I go on air like, this idiot Larry Williams. You are a great example of forgiveness. And I can't thank you enough for not holding that against me.
Please. If you said it now, I wouldn't hold it against you.
No, I've never said it. I know better now. You're a first-year guy there. I didn't know who you were.
It's all good. There's no forgiveness.
I'm glad you're forgiving me. We've come a long way since 2004.
It's taken a while. So, anyway, how do you – okay, you had a – your show for years was 3 to 6 p.m., correct?
I've done every time slot.
Okay.
I did. I started out mornings like 9 to noon. And these times switched. It might have been – it was 10 to noon. 10 to noon, and then I went early afternoon, then I went drive time afternoon, and then maybe 12 years ago, the morning was when it was offered, and I thought that was, it's really one of the two best time slots, probably the best, I think, but man, I jumped at that. Roy Philpott and Allie Haley and I did a show together,
yep.
And it was awesome, and still have a great time doing it. It's a lot of advantage. Now, it starts early, and you know, but done every time slot, but that's my favorite time slot.
Do you do your preparation the night before?
Most of it. I take a notepad around me, and I keep it in my car. I drive it around, and when a thought pops in, I write it down that day. I do, at the top of our rundown sheets, what you call them, the most important thing is you got to have your ads. And so every segment's broken down by what ads are coming on that day. I've got the date, and on the left-hand column, I'll show you, is who our guests are that day. And, you know, we're adding guests and taking guests off. And I do them for all 5 days, or the days I want to talk about certain things. I keep 5 sheets with me every single week. And then I have two things, news and topics. And as news breaks across Nick Bosa's gonna, you know, he's announced it, so you write that down throughout the day. Just have it with you. And then, so that I start that really about noon. When I get home from lunch, about 1 o'clock every day, I start that for about 30 minutes or an hour. Just pay attention a little bit. And then as I watch SportsCenter, as I listen to some, you know, somebody's shows or read something on Tiger Illustrated, something will pop up in there. And then about right before dinner, as we're cooking dinner, I take about an hour. And then right before I go to bed, review about 20 minutes of just in case. And then I got to get up. That's not a lot of time, Larry. It's not, you know, a couple hours tops. But right before I go to bed, you know, I'll write down a few little things. And then when we get up, I don't get up till about 5. I go on the show at 6. But I'll go in for 10 or 15 minutes and just scores, any of the late night scores that happen or any late night breaking news. News doesn't normally break. People go to bed earlier now. They get up earlier now. So you catch up people up a little bit on the show about the Red Sox won last night, 8-6. And when I went to bed, it was 3-3. So I kind of, you know, refresh that, watch the Sports Center in that first hour to kind of see what went on there. The only news that's really broken during my show, the big stuff, Sean Taylor got killed. Remember the Washington Redskins guy? That happened during my show. The probably second biggest story ever during my show, I got a phone call at 4:30 in the morning that Oliver Purnell was leaving to go to DePaul from a college basketball coach. And I couldn't call Oliver, and I couldn't confirm it. And luckily, at 6:05, somebody else reported it, because that was one of those, man, you know this.
In like, the morning?
Yes. 6:05, somebody else reported that he was flirting or talking. And so we went on the air, and I was like, well, this is out there. A source of tells me that he is going to take it or whatever. The biggest one and the worst one ever, and a day I'll never, ever forget, is before about to go on the air, Rodney Williams called me and said that Jim Phillips had passed away. Mm. And that's a day that Jim Phillips was a friend of mine. I learned so much from him. I did very little play-by-play during my 20 years so far, but I used to do baseball for a couple of years, Clemson baseball. And Jim would come in and tell you, he didn't mind telling you how wrong you were about stuff. But he helped me out tremendously with slow down baseball. You can wear your audience out. And I did color for football. I've never done any basketball, but color's easy, natural for that. But in baseball, he said, you wear your audience out. And the other thing was, I would say, ground ball out to Khalil Greene over to Michael Johnson in time. And he would have to say, your listeners don't know that Khalil Greene's at shortstop and Michael Johnson's at first base. So you would say, ground ball out to the shortstop, Khalil Greene, up and over to Johnson at first, in time, that kind of stuff. He was great at that, but he was best at coming in to the show as he was driving over from Greene, we're taping something, and he always wanted to talk about the Cleveland Indians or the Cleveland Browns. Larry Schott did that a lot, too, because he's a Cleveland guy. So Larry lived right around the corner. And when it wasn't basketball season, I did afternoon shows at the time, and Larry would be jogging, and he would come in. A lot of times he would call on the way to the airport. He had to go to the Greenville airport to fly out and see somebody. And we'd talk about football the whole time, or the Cleveland Indian baseball, whatever, the whole time. But those 3 days, those three stories, Sean Taylor, Oliver Purnell, and then Jim Phillips. It's really on the big news during our time.
What time do you go to bed?
I'd like to say 9, but 10 o'clock usually. You know, I try to start going at 9, but 10 o'clock.
Those Mondays after a football weekend have to be. Because you go to a lot of these road games, you're up those night games, you're up till 3 or 4 in the morning.
Yeah, but you know, Sunday's a relaxing day. You come back home. Like, we'll get in from Boston, we're flying from Boston that afternoon. But really, Larry, I mean, it's not physically demanding. I always think about, you know what bothers me is when our beat writers always say in August every year, or our TV guys, I don't want to pick on anybody, but oh man. That's it. We're about to get all busy here. Oh, it's going to be a long...
See you in January.
Yeah. It's like, hold on, man. Hold on. We have uniformed men and women that are staying up 20 hours a day in 120 degrees in Afghanistan or Iraq, and we're going to talk about, oh, man, I got to go cover football today.
My favorite, or my least favorite, is the airline complaining. Thanks, Delta. Flight got delayed 20 minutes, as if Delta owes this sports writer or media personality something. That happens all the time.
I saw a comedian bit one time, and the guy says, let me get this right. You get to go in a flying piece of steel or aluminum that can take you, what took the people on covered wagons weeks and weeks to do, you can fly from New York to LA in 3 hours, and because the plane was 15 minutes late, you can complain about it or something? What?
First world problems, man.
No doubt. No doubt about it.
All right. This has been 4 hours in front of a microphone for you today on this Thursday.
This has been the best of it, though.
Thank you. We'll have to have you on again.
I love it.
We spent 55 minutes talking, didn't even talk any football, so maybe have you on again and get into some of the stuff people really care about.
If for some reason I happen to call you idiot on the radio, it won't happen. If it slips out, will you forgive me again?
I will give you a forgiveness in advance, in addition to the one from 14 years ago.
I'll quickly tell you this, too. As I told you before we got on the air, I can't wait. I'm driving to Tallahassee. I can't wait to listen to David Hales. I can't wait to listen to Shaka Smarts. I'm a big fan of the podcast. Ben Boulware, man, that had me fired up. I was ready to run through a wall. Those are great. Keep it up. Enjoy it. Tiger Illustrated is great. Get your own passwords. Don't share passwords, guys. I enjoyed it, Larry.
I appreciate you reading that cue card, Mickey.
Yeah.
Of all the stuff I told you to say. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
All right, that was fun. Thank you to Mickey Plowler for coming over to the official Clemson Dubcast studios to record that. Thank you to our title sponsor, Parham Smith and Arts and Holt Law Firm in downtown Greenville. Also, the Abernathy Boutique Hotel within earshot and eyeshot, is that a word, of Death Valley. And Tandem Payment in Greenville. Thank you to our sponsors. Please patronize them because they are helping make all this happen. Most of all, thanks to all of you. I think we had over 30,000 downloads of the podcast at last check. That's pretty good in, I guess, a month and a half. So really pleased about that. Have fun this weekend. Should be a fun game. Be safe. And next podcast scheduled to drop Monday morning. Cheers, everybody.